Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. It is Halloween, October 31st. Rex, two questions to start. A, do you give out full-size candy bars? And B, what sort of combo collaborative outfit do you and Bunk have whipped up for this Halloween?
We don't give out full-size candy bars. Do you? Wow, you make a lot more money than I do if you give out full-size candy bars. We give out the good stuff. Like there's Reese's Pieces and Snickers and all the good stuff, but I don't like you're talking about like a full size. No, we don't do that.
Pretty popular. That's pretty popular now. If you want to give the kids what they actually want, we don't personally. And actually, shopping for Halloween candy this year, it was insanely expensive. I don't know if it's inflation. I don't know if the chocolate factories are going through a difficult time. Expensive. $8.99 a bag for some Kit Kats and some Twix and some Airheads.
Yeah, a little bit excessive. We have friends over, not really a party tonight. Happy Halloween, by the way. And we don't really dress up. Like my wife is really into gory stuff. Bunkmate likes to do the whole makeup thing. Stopped doing that. I stopped doing that a few years ago. She still does it.
No, we still do makeup, including on this podcast.
That's true. There's only one kind of makeup that I'm I'm comfortable putting on my face now. If I'm being honest,
this one.
Yeah, that's right. That one. Thank you, Jess. Really appreciate it. So it's more of a, like the highlight for us is, so we all kind of go in the driveway. Never been to my house, but so we have a big driveway. So all the kids walk by and like at the end of the driveway, we had the big bowl. And so we kind of let them put their grubby little paws in there and pull out whatever it is that they want. And then we have like a cooler of like soft drinks and waters for the kids. And then we have a grown-up cooler of beers and whatnot for the grown-ups. And so we're a big hit around the neighborhood. Like the dads will make two loops intentionally to make two stops at our house just to make sure that grab whatever candy you want. IPA, good.
So you don't give out full-size candy bars, but you do give out double IPAs.
Not double, that'd be ridiculous, but yes, we give out IPAs. Come by the house, 810 Riverbend.
Old money bag hoggard. Folks, yeah. if you want some IPAs, swing it over to Longwood. What age do kids stop trick-or-treating? I mean, Mine turns 5 in December. I've got a 2-year-old as well. Like, how many more years do we have to go through this? Is this another decade? Do kids age out of it? I live in Nocatee, where literally everyone is between the ages of 32 and 47. If you're a parent, I feel like we're in the throes of it for the next decade here.
Decade's probably good. It kind of depends. Like I had 3, so I had sort of the perfect experiment. Like one of the middle one got old really really quick. And so he quit, stopped kind of trick-or-treating around 13, 14 years old. The younger one probably went a little bit later. So, yeah, you got about a decade. Got a decade of pulling kids around the neighborhood when it's hot and sweaty in Florida in October. And although it's going to be nice tonight.
It is going to be nice tonight. It'll be cooler tomorrow. More on that at the end of this podcast. That is what we call in the business a tease. Rex and I have a special event in which we will be together on November 1st. Rex, let's get to the golf a little bit before we get into our shindig on Wednesday. To me, the most notable news item of the past week, hello, Titleist, in a press conference last week ahead of Asia Pacific Amateur at Royal Melbourne. How much fun would that have been if you were a great amateur player to play Royal Melbourne with a spot to play in the Masters? Both Masters chairman Fred Ridley and RNA chief executive Martin Slumbers were asked about what they are going to do with LIV golfers as it pertains to the major championships in 2024. They had two different answers. At least that's how I interpreted it. Fred Ridley of the Masters said he does not anticipate any changes at this time, the 2024 Masters, while Martin Slumbers said that recent suggestions, most notably in the Telegraph, that the PIF and the RNA could somehow negotiate a deal that would guarantee some spots in the Open for LIV golfers was, quote, completely off the mark, and that they're still evaluating the qualification criteria for next year. What was your read on all of this that dropped late last week?
I need to capitulate on something here before we get into that answer. Really, really, really good question, but I need to apologize. I was very critical of Bunkmate, my beautiful wife, last week for having the audacity of saying that the David Beckham docuseries, which is a 4-parter on Netflix, was better than the Michael Jordan docuseries, which was an 8-parter, I think, on Netflix, if I remember correctly. I thought that was just sacrilege. I thought, what kind of heresy is this? This is ridiculous. You don't know what you're talking about. I have since watched the David Beckham doc, and a couple things. One, it is better because I think it's more honest, if I'm being clear. Like, I just think David Beckham allowed himself to be shown as the beautiful man that he is, and also as this sort of flawed handsome man, as well as this sort of flawed sort of anti-hero with all the warts that come along with that. And so I thought it was really good storytelling. I'm not a big fan of the kickball, but you got a better idea of exactly why, what made him so great. But that's not why I'm capitulating. We talked about this yesterday. I couldn't wait to get to it. And these are not sponsors of the podcast. As you all know, we don't have a sponsor of the podcast.
We'd love a sponsor, particularly grill sponsor or an alcohol sponsor. Literally anything.
I'm about to give some free publicity. So at the end of this the last 15 minutes of the Beckham series, it essentially is Beckham outside of his English estate on a beautiful winter morning. And you can tell it's cold. And apparently he spends every morning in this tent that's got like this unbelievably like versatile and robust and massive grill. And I'm going to get this wrong. You looked it up yesterday. It's the Cashmere Caveman Company. Is that it?
Yes. Yep.
Get that right. And so it's just this massive kitchen. So you have, and it's all fed by fuel, by wood or charcoal. It's got like a Blackstone version. It's obviously got a smoker. It's got all of these things. I watched that three times.
Just that part.
Just that. And then I took a deep dive on the internet that lasted about 3 hours trying to figure out exactly what the caveman.
How much do those kitchens cost?
His was 50 grand. I'm very versed in this, but his is kind of built out a little bit like his tent. We have our friend.
That feels like a bargain. It feels like a bargain, to be honest with you.
It kind of did. It is a tent, but we have our friend with the European tour, Tom, who we spent a lot of time with at the Ryder Cup, and Tom kind of blew us both away when we're getting to the grilling talk really, really early in this podcast. I apologize. But he kind of blew us away because we were talking about, you and I were saying what we were going to grill when we got home, and he's like, I already put mine away. And he lives in England. And we were both like dumbfounded. Like if you told us that he threw his car into the river, I think you and I would have had less of a shocked response because we were like, what are you talking about? And I guess it gets really cold. And that in the UK, they don't have like porches like you're sitting on your lovely porch right now. I have my porch that just got finished. And so they don't have that. And so it made sense as soon as I saw Beckham in his tent with the flaps down and the smoke going and he's cooking and he's making breakfast and the whole nine yards. And I'm like, oh, I get it now. That's brilliant.
Tom, my man, just get a pellet grill, man. You plug it in, let it ride all winter long. I do appreciate that mea culpa off the top to bunkmate. I'm not sure if she's off camera pointing a gun at you. I feel like you should be holding up a newspaper. This is not a hostage video. How about the question, Rex? How about the question at hand, the golf question? Now 7 minutes in this podcast. I do appreciate that mea culpa once again.
Good luck with that one, Goldie. I'm going to say that it's the answers I expected. There's no reason for the major championships to move quickly on this. This goes back to talking with a lot of LIV players, talking with a lot of LIV officials 2 weeks ago at Doral at their team championship. There is a high level of confidence. Now, this is sort of the new way to deal with the media, is if you say something loud enough and long enough that you hope it just comes true. So in this particular case, I think that's what LIV is leaning into, that if you say whatever it is you want loud enough and long enough and repeatedly enough, that eventually the four major championships will cave, because we've addressed this because of the world ranking situation, and LIV Golf does not get world ranking points, that now you've left those players in sort of this major championship limbo. Taylor Gooch, for example, isn't qualified for the majors next year. So it becomes an issue. The easiest carve out, at least from the LIV Golf perspective, is if each one of the four major championships decided just to make some sort of exemption categories for, pick your number, the top five off the LIV money list or points list, whatever you want to call it, top 10, whatever the case may be. At least that provides an avenue. And I think from the LIV perspective, that makes sense. From the major championship perspective, it's clear they're not going to get bullied into this. And I'm not even saying it's not going to happen, because if you're Fred Ridley, or if you're the RNA, or if you're any of the majors, it does start to become an issue if you don't, quote unquote, have the best players in the world. I think we could have argued that Taylor Gooch is a top whatever player, fill in the gap, top 20 player, top 15 player. Like, he's a really good player, even though he joined that tour. If he's not in the major championships, that's a problem. But it doesn't seem as if the majors are in much of a rush to get to whatever the solution is going to be.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that the major organizers, who were part of the OWGR board that made the world ranking decision as it pertains to LIV, like Jay Monahan recused himself, Keith Pellett recused himself. The major organizers were the ones who decided LIV Golf's fate. And so it's pretty obvious that they're not in a rush to do LIV Golf a solid. You make a great point, Rex, about them screaming and thinking long enough. If they say it for long enough, that they're going to make some changes. They said that about the world ranking. They kept calling it obsolete for months and months on end. Well, that's still the determining factor in most of these major championship qualification criteria. They say over and over again that the majors need to do the right thing and carve out spots for LIV golfers, whether it's one guy, whether it's three guys, whether it's five guys, whether it's 12 guys, which is what Phil Mickelson suggested. And the majors just come back and say, not really. That's the way we're going to be doing things. I do agree that the optics are not great. Having just five LIV golfers who are exempt into all four major championships in 2024, based mostly on the recent major championship performance, those five players being Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, Phil Mickelson, and Cameron Smith. I agree. That's not a great look. Then again, you sit around and look at the roster of LIV players, like who are we leaving out? Who deserves to be in the Masters? Who's not going to be there? Now, I do agree that Taylor Gooch, it seems odd to not have him there. By Data Golf's metrics, which takes into account LIV performances as well as traditional PGA Tour and DP World Tour performances, he's the 29th best player in the world, according to their metrics, and yet he's outside the top 20 in the OWGR and has virtually no path to get to Augusta National. But I also, you go down the list, like, is Harold Varner, Mito Pereira, Joaquin Niemann. Like, I'm not sure that the Masters is worse off if we don't have those players. And yet I still side with the LIV players that there should be a very, very small carve out for them as it pertains to the majors.
I don't know if I side with them. I wouldn't put it that way. I sympathize, or I guess I empathize would be the better way of saying it.
I certainly don't empathize with them because they made to move to LIV knowing full well that this could
be consequences. Yes. And so, and I think most of the players that I talked to at Doral understand that. They understand that when they walked away, this was always going to be a possibility, regardless of what Greg Norman or anyone else at LIV Golf said, that there was always going to be the chance that they weren't going to get world ranking points and that the majors were going to become a non-starter. I guess this all dovetails with the larger conversation that's going on right now. And I've been on sort of this alert since late Friday night, as far as story broke on Sportico that Endeavor, which is a big private equity firm, had essentially been told by the PGA Tour that the bid that they had made as part of whatever's going to come to the new with the new co, with PGA Tour Enterprises, wasn't good enough, and so they had to walk away. I've been told that there's six or seven other private equities who have shown an interest, sent in a bid, whatever the case may be, and that includes the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. I think this is all contingent on wherever we land, whether if that's 2 months from now, when December 31st comes and goes, and that's the deadline for the framework agreement, or my guess is beyond that, because I would find it hard to believe that they come to some sort of solution. I'm sure the majors are just going to wait to see how this plays out.
I want to touch on that, Rex. So Endeavor was believed to be one of the leading candidates, right, to invest in the PGA Tour's new for-profit model. My initial takeaway after seeing that headline was that if the tour is in any position at all to turn down this offer, it either has or it believes that it will get a better deal either from the PIF or other suitors. As you mentioned, there's probably six or seven others that are in the mix. Do you agree with that takeaway that if the tour is turning it down, it either has a better deal or it believes that it can get one over the next couple of months?
My understanding is the Endeavor deal was the least attractive of however many they have, whether it's six or seven, whether it's two or three. We know the PIF is involved in these negotiations. I think it's safe to say Fenway Sports is involved. I think their CEO has actually admitted as much in the media. There's a connection between Jay Monahan and Fenway Sports. He essentially started his career there. So you would think that those negotiations would be robust, to use that word for the second time on the podcast. Must be trying to get some sort of award today. The way it was explained to me is this process is trying to find the best possible deal for the PGA Tour and the PGA Tour players. And in this particular case, it's clear Endeavor's offer was not that. Now, this is going to come up over the next few months, if not the next few years. A lot of this deal is hanging in the balance because of player equity. And that's the way the tour hopes to make those players whole. We're talking about Rory, talking about Tiger. We're talking about the players who stay loyal to the PGA Tour is offer them some sort of equity in whatever PGA Tour Enterprises is going to be. it seems Endeavor's offer didn't include any player equity. So that's a non-starter. I said this yesterday on Golf Today. I was on after you did your roundtable with Joel Beal, which was very good, by the way. I will say this, that I was talking with someone in the private equity world about this yesterday. And I said, I can only imagine how complicated negotiations are for a billion-dollar deal between two entities that are that large, the PGA Tour, the Public Investment Fund, and then whoever else is involved. Like, I can only envision in my mind how complicated and nuanced those negotiations are. Now you add to this the idea that, oh, if we also make this work, then we have to find a way to get the LIV players back on the PGA Tour in a way that's appeases everyone, which seems impossible. You need to find a way to make the players whole who stayed loyal to the PGA Tour. And you also have to figure out how the governance works, because now all of a sudden you have one entity, whether that's the PIF or someone else, that has invested billions, and they're going to want a seat at the table. And how much is the tour going to be willing to give up to accept that money? It's so many steps and it's so involved. Like once I kind of went down the rabbit hole on Friday night when the Sportico story broke, like I'm becoming more and more disheveled by the whole idea, because I can't wrap my mind around how this would ever work.
It's so nuanced, and it would represent such a seismic shift in the PGA Tour's future. Like, thinking that this all could get hammered out in 6 months seemed pretty wildly unrealistic. I'm with you as it relates to Fenway. I don't know what would be like the golf equivalent of this. Like, they're essentially the leader in the clubhouse at this point. Like, Jay Monahan began his career at Fenway. He was the EVP before he left for the tour. Fenway is also involved with TGL, the new Tiger and Rory Tech Infused League, with the Boston area team. We'll get to that in a moment here as well. So that would certainly be an attractive option, the quote unquote leader in the clubhouse, if they are going to go the PE way. There was, Rex, one thing that I wanted to touch on, because initially, when the first story came out, there was some talk that the PIF must have spiked this Endeavor deal, because they have the right of first refusal in the framework agreement. But that's not true, and to me, that's an important distinction for readers and listeners to know. Can you lay that out for us?
This is the third copy of the framework agreement that I've printed out, because I keep like scribbling all over it, that eventually it looks like a 3-year-old's, you know, project that you put on the refrigerator. So I keep having to print it back out. But in the first section, it refers to the PIF having right of first refusal, but that's only if there is a definitive agreement. So between now and the idea that there may or may not be a definitive agreement, they do not. The PIF does not have right of first refusal. When that clause would come into play would be if we get to December 31st and they announce that the PGA Tour and the PIF have come up with X, Y, and Z, whatever the definitive agreement looks like. At that point, this agreement calls for them to have right of first refusal on future investment. So at that point, if Fenway still wanted to stay in the game and we still want to be involved and we'd like to invest $1 billion instead of $2 billion, then the PIF would have the right to say yes or no to that. And I do want to just clean up real quick. I don't know that Fenway is the leader in the clubhouse, to be honest with you. I just don't know. If I had to guess, it's I think the PIF is still the leader, because they are going to give the most attractive offer. I don't have a doubt in my mind that they're going to offer the most attractive deal for the tour and for the players, for all the reasons that you and I have talked about. The idea that the public investment fund wants an immediate return on their investment is not correct. Like, they think in decades, not days. Whereas if you go to any other private equity, PE, as you're calling it now, they want some sort of return, and they want it almost immediately. So let's say Fenway does step in and they do suddenly get a seat at the table and a piece of the PGA Tour in this new for-profit entity. They're going to want to see results very, very quickly. And where do those results come from? Because now you start talking about, why does the tour need $2 billion or whatever the number is, injection? Like, why do they need the money? The easy answer is, because the model they've created with the signature events and the elevated purses and everything else.
It's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. That based on the economics of the moment, they can't do this. Even with very, very lucrative media rights deals, they can't sustain this. And so you need that $2 billion. But going forward, where does the profit come from?
Cutting.
They
have to cut.
Cutting, consolidation. You're talking about, and I've asked this question a couple of times and never gotten a good answer. The idea that NewCo, or PGA Tour Enterprises, is going to be made up of all the for-profit assets of the PGA Tour, as well as LIV Golf and the DP World Tour. I've asked for a list, like, give me 10 items that are for-profit. And it's very, very hard to get that definitive list. And I will say that suddenly you start talking about the TPC networks. You start talking about the President's Cup would be a for-profit asset. You're talking about any of the events that fall under championship management. There are a lot of things involved here, but I don't see how that profit margin works in the traditional sense for a PE.
The reason why I think
boring conversation.
No, but the reason I still think Fenway is a leader in the clubhouse is because the a tour PIF deal would not be palatable to the majority of the members. It wouldn't be palatable to the fans. It wouldn't be palatable to U.S. lawmakers. It wouldn't be palatable potentially to the DOJ, which is already looking.
The DOJ would be the bigger one.
Yeah,
the DOJ. And look, the players have to approve this, but the DOJ one is going to make or break this.
Yeah, and so we're potentially looking at a split on December 31st, the two sides going their separate ways if the deadline is not extended. And then as we talked about last week on the podcast, following your trip to Live Miami could get into a situation where the PIF and Live simply double down on their model and go perhaps even more aggressively in courting some of the PGA Tour players. Whether they would make the jump, knowing what we know now about the OWGR decision, very much remains to be seen. Rex, you touched on the TGL. There was some news that came out on Tuesday. Not going to lie, a little bit confused by the whole TGL thing. We know there's going to be 24 players. We know there's going to be matches that begin on Tuesday during football season, and I believe they switch to Monday nights in primetime, be broadcast on ESPN. But the format came out with this, what they're calling this modern match play, as well as the venue. I'll touch real quick on the venue. It's actually bigger than I thought it was going to be. I thought this would, they're basically just like going to a PGA Tour superstore and like hitting into the screen. Like you and I have done countless times where they juice the numbers. They guilt you into getting the brand new driver. And then when you actually get on the range, you hit it everywhere. More on that in a bit as well. But the actual golf course, what they're doing, this is at this newly built SoFi Center. It is 97 yards long, roughly the size of a football field. They're hitting off real grass tee boxes. There's going to be sand. The simulator screen that they are hitting into is 20 times the size of a standard simulator. So I didn't quite have that visual in my mind exactly right. I'm also intrigued, Rex, by this custom-built green complex that they're calling the Green Zone. It's larger than four basketball courts and will feature the largest ever adaptable putting surface in which these things, these actuators and jacks, can change the slope of the green. I don't understand it. I'm going to have to cover the first one in person just to see it for myself and just to get a bigger understanding. I think you want to go to the first one as well. But what was your takeaway from the format, the venue, the course, as this thing starts to take shape beginning in January 2024?
I've talked about TGL quite a bit. I think I have been the one that says the technology is going to be the thing, along with the personalities that make or break this. This is an entertainment product. I'm going to hijack the podcast one more time. My apologies to Jason Gold, because I'm going to need you to slide that graphic in right about now, the one that I sent you, because I do want to point this out, that we are 23 minutes in, and this has not come up, that you and I played each other in fantasy football this week. Tough. And not only did I win, which I wasn't sure if I was going to win. At the beginning of the week, the projections were not going my way. The final score, ladies and gentlemen, drum roll, 166.18 to 99.28. Were you even trying?
It's just really tough. I mean, we're sitting here. I've got
Lamar Jackson killed you.
On IR. I mean, I feel good that I beat one of your sons last week, but this team's just not very good. It has not panned out exactly how I thought. Bijan Robinson has not been the slate breaker that we always anticipated. Tony Pollard has been a massive disappointment. His expected fantasy points per carry is among the worst in the league. I'm in a low spot right now, Rex. I'm not feeling good about it, and I don't actually feel good about making a deep playoff push.
You notice I didn't mention anything about my team in the other league, so clearly I don't want to address that at all.
You're in 12th. I'm at 11th.
Oof, that's not going well at all. To answer your question, we do these pods early because you're very much a morning person. So it takes me a while to wake up, even with a gallon of coffee down my throat. I will say that this concept kind of gets me fired up. And again, this is contingent on two different things. One, the technology has to work. And you and I are friends with a lot of people who are working for this outfit. And I have a lot of faith that they can get the technology to work, but it's never been done before. So there's a lot of logistical challenges that they're going to have to get to if the product that we end up with on January 9th, I believe it is, if we're watching it and you and I are both kind of like, yeah, that's cool. As I've gone through the list and as I've spoken with people there, I've kind of gotten very excited about the idea that hitting off real grass, oh, that's awesome. Hitting out of real rough, yeah, very, very good. Any shot from 50 to 60, 70 yards will be actual shots, not into that big oversized simulator green. All of this is very attractive to me. The idea that you can essentially turn the green into whatever green you want to turn it into.
It's sort insane.
It's on a rotating table. It has all kinds of levers underneath that you can create breaks here. I remember having a meeting. It was earlier this year with some folks, and they were talking about what they were hoping to build in the SoFi Center. And the idea going forward, this won't be out of the gates, but imagine that, let's say Tiger Woods' team is the home team this Tuesday night, and Tiger has decided to build his own. It only needs to be a 15-hole golf course because they only play 15-hole matches. But he can build his own virtual 15-hole golf course. Imagine sort of the opportunities. So I do think that part is cool if they can pull it off. The bigger part in my mind is, are the players going to realize that this is less competition and more entertainment? Because a lot of players that they've signed up, in my opinion, have a hard time wrapping their mind around that. And you're going to need personality, personality, personality. Like, you're going to need all of these players to be on top of their game. And I'm not talking about their putting and their wedge game. Really don't care about that stuff. What I want to hear is Patrick Cantlay showing some sort of personality, which he's always struggled with in the past. Lucas Glover is on one of the teams, and I've covered Lucas for a long time, big fan. I don't know that he has the gear to show some sort of real personality in the heat of the moment. All these players are going to be mic'd up. It's going to be live. You're going to have the opportunity to talk smack. You're going to have the opportunity to have a little fun with it. Will they? That's going to be the breaker.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly an intriguing collection of players. I think anytime you have Tiger and Rory at the helm, it has an opportunity to be successful. We've seen Tiger, though, in a number of mic'd up situations, whether it's with the matches or skin games, whatever the case may be. He is not the most appealing mic'd up player. He seems very hesitant to say what he actually wants to say, despite him being a notorious trash talker among the players. I'm with you. Like, I do think there is some potential. Like, JT mic'd up is always a good time. Max Homa
will be good.
Mic'd up is good. Billy Horschel mic'd up. Terrell Hatton mic'd up. I want to know how long the delay is going to be. Tom Kim, but you also have, I guess, some more subdued personalities, whether it's Cantlay, whether it's Cam Young, whether it's Lucas Glover. You also mix in some of these new age guys like Minwoo Lee. I'm curious to see it. I'm not sure if it's going to be a smash. I'm not sure if I'm going to be tuning in and setting my alarm every Monday night to watch. I do think there is potential. How much are these guys getting paid, Rex? What's your inclination? What are your sources, #sources, telling you about how much is actually getting into these guys' pockets?
Depends who it is. Obviously, Tiger and Rory are co-founders of the league, and so they have equity and they're fully invested in whatever it's going to become. They've actually put a lot of very, very strong business people behind them. I think Arthur Blank owns the team from Atlanta. Like, you can keep going down the list. Steph Curry's
Coen brothers.
The Coen brothers are over the New York team. So from a business model, it seems to be working well. I don't think the actual contracts, because if you look at the number of players that they've actually announced and signed, they have more players than they have spots. That's by design, because they know that Rory probably is going to struggle to get from, let's say he plays in Maui to start the year.
Nope.
Some players are going to struggle to turn around. Well, yeah, he's a bad example. But whoever starts at Century and get all the way to the East Coast by Tuesday. So there's going to be some logistical things. So they had to create more spots. So it's very much a sliding scale. I think this goes back to, and again, this is the player empowerment thing. I think less about what they're getting paid up front. This isn't LIV Golf. They weren't all just offered millions of dollars in contracts. I think what they were offered is equity in whatever it's going to become in the future. And I think, like, the announcement that came on Tuesday kind of talked about the idea that now you're going to start getting into the franchises. You're going to start getting into the teams, which is very similar to what LIV Golf is doing. And that's how that equity is going to build. I don't think there was any staggering figures for anyone right out of the gate. There was probably some sort of appearance fee like money, but the bigger deal is, okay, now you have equity in whatever the New York team's going to be.
Yeah, I just found it interesting with some of the players who have been announced to TGL, who have kind of had one eye on LIV over the past couple of years, whether it's Cameron Young, Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele, Adam Scott signing up for this thing. There had to have been some sort of inducement that would certainly help. So make sure to go to golfchannel.com or NBCSports.com/golf for the latest on the venue and the format, which yours, your Rex Hoggard laid out in intricate detail. Rex, you'll be up in the Ponte Vedra area on Wednesday for a driver fitting with our friends from Titleist. Not going to lie, played golf last Friday, 4 days ago. Easily the worst round of golf I've ever played in my life. I didn't lose one ball. I didn't lose six balls. I didn't lose 10 balls. I lost 14 golf balls, each and every one a Titleist Pro V1. And so every time I'm just sniping it into a hazard, $5, $5, $5, just over and over again, left going left. I don't care what golf course you're playing. I would happen to be playing at Marsh Landing, where I'm now a member. Shout out Marsh Landing. But Lily could not play that shot on any golf course. Like, they're 100 yards left. And so that makes me a little bit fearful for a driver fitting, because I might be unsalvageable at this point. I did want to give you some breaking news, Rex. The high forecast, the high temperature for Wednesday is a real feel of 59 degrees with wind gusts of, yes, this is right, 37 miles an hour. If that wind is into and from the left, we're both right-handed, not even going to bother showing up. Just give me a standard driver. I won't have to do this another time. What are your thoughts on your upcoming visit?
Well, we could have done it today, Halloween. So we could have done it Tuesday. And I think that's a Ponte Vedra Inn and Club and whatever the case may be.
Ponte Vedra Inn and Club, very nice, $100,000 initiation fee.
Can we change to today? Is that ship sailed? No?
That ship has sailed. Yep. Not possible.
Do the best we can.
It is beautiful today. It's 80 degrees. It's going to be a wonderful night for trick-or-treating until God knows what hour.
Yeah, because into off the off the left, that's going to be no good. Like, what's the use? Like, I think I'll just mail it in. The bigger issue for me is I haven't put the top back on my Jeep. And so it might be a cold ride up and a cold ride back is the bigger issue.
I mean, that is a massive cold front that is sweeping in if we're dropping 25 degrees day over day. However, I'm still optimistic that they can position us on the range to maybe get down and off the right, in which we could just take those drives to pound town, set unrealistic expectations for ourselves.
I think they have hitting bays too at Pablo Creek, if I remember correctly. Like, they have a very nice setup. Like, you mentioned the entry fee for Ponte Vedra. My guess is the entry fee for Pablo is even higher.
Yeah, even higher. We will not be sneaking out for an emergency 18 after our fitting session, but we are very much looking forward to that. We'll have a full recap in excruciating detail on next week's podcast. Rex, a big Saturday ahead of us in college football, at least for those of us who support the number one Georgia Bulldogs, home against Missouri, the team that almost tripped up the Bulldogs last year and rocked their back-to-back national championships. That's the 3:30 game. And then LSU at Alabama, essentially the game that will decide the SEC West champion, who Georgia hopefully will be facing the SEC championship game. So in other words, what are you throwing on the grill?
That's a good question. I just got the kitchen done, so I'm trying to get it all organized back there. Did smash burgers last night. I did smash burgers last night with pimento cheese instead of regular cheese. Kids loved it. Went over really well. Don't know. Haven't even thought about it. I haven't done ribs in a while. I think we're going to have friends over this weekend for the games. By the way, Georgia looked really good against Florida. As an aside, since I've already capitulated to the bunkmate, you know what we won't ever be doing again? We'll never be going to a college football game, because she made it exactly one quarter, not one half. Not one game, one quarter at the UCF game against West Virginia on Saturday. So we won't be doing that again.
What was the reason? I mean, my wife has taken Cam, my 4-year-old, to two Jaguars games this year. He at least lasted one half. And he's a mere child.
We barely made it into the stadium. It was too hot, which it was kind of hot. I will grant you that, although it's better than it could have been in Central Florida this time of year. And it was very crowded. It was a sold-out game. And the bounce house probably isn't the most relaxing place. If you kind of have some anxiety issues already going into it, it's moving around quite a bit in that particular game. So it was a couple different things, and that didn't work out very well. As a matter of fact, I'm actually surprised by the time we parked, and we got really good parking. My brother-in-law actually works for the school, so we were able to use his tickets and his parking. By the time we parked, I was shocked that she actually got out of the car, because it already had built to the idea that, yeah, she wasn't going to like this at all.
Oh, gosh. Oh, so, yeah, yeah. So that's last Bunk's last football game of the year. I had a great time with my wife, as well as your friend and mine, Ricky Johnson, and his lovely wife, Catherine. We had great seats for the Georgia-Florida game, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party.
Have you ever heard of this?
It's like loge seating. I might be mispronouncing that. L-O-G-E. Never heard of it. It's essentially a platform that is erected on the field. And so, like, we could not have been closer to the end zone. Very interesting angle. Never sat that low before, like seeing the gaps lined up. And if you think a college football player looks small on TV, I guarantee you he is not. Even like the scrawniest, most pipsqueak college football player is still massive in real life. And to see the speed with which the offensive linemen move and the defensive linemen move was absolutely breathtaking, seeing it that up close and personal. I mean, I hadn't done that for a Georgia game in 15 years since I used to cover the Bulldogs for the Athens Bear Herald. So that was certainly an eye-opening experience, and always better when the Dogs win.
How'd you get those tickets?
43-20. Shout out Kevin Miller to the UGA athletic department. He has now moved on to Virginia, and so I need to find a new friend in the athletic department. So if anyone's listening from this from UGA, I'll hit you up on October 1, 2024 for some more Georgia-Florida tickets. Thank you for asking, Rex, what we're going to be doing this weekend. You mentioned Smash Burgers. My wife's aunt and uncle, who I love dearly, are coming to visit on Friday. They actually requested Smash Burgers. They have become such a hit in the Lavender-Hoskin family that I'll be doing that for them. I do appreciate that price point better than trying to do like five or six ribeyes, which could have gotten a little bit pricey. We'll also go down to Dan's Seafood in Ponte Vedra over near TBC Sawgrass, get 24 oysters. We had them for our seafood fest a couple of weeks ago. They were big. They were easy to open. They were salty and briny and delicious. So looking forward to doing that.
How'd you cook those? Did you smoke those?
No, I just grilled them. So you pop them open, wait till it starts to bubble a little bit, throw some cheese down, melt it. Whew. Char-grilled oysters can absolutely not beat them. On Saturday for the game, I've got a pork butt I've been meaning to throw on the workhorse, and so I'll do that. We'll probably do some pulled pork nachos, which should tide us over for the 6 or 7 hours that we have to do. Might smoke a tri-tip as well. Shout out my buddy Sean, who hosted us for the Jags game on Sunday. Had a delicious tri-tip. That got me in the mood to make one as well. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Happy Halloween to all who celebrate. Enjoy those full-size candy bars. And if you go to the Hoggard House, most certainly enjoy those double IPAs.